newspaperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all.
Here we are with a half hour of commentary and analysis on things that go on in the news media. I'm Rex Smith from the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union, here with my colleagues. We have Rosemary Armeo, former investigative journalist and professor. We have Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette, now vice president of the New York Press Association. And we have Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist, commentator, and the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Dr. Shartok, here is a question for you. It is Sunshine Week when the media pay attention to the ability to access documents and material from open government. Do you ever have any trouble getting people to tell you what's going on? You do a lot of work interviewing politicians and so on. What happens when people ice you out, when they don't tell you what's actually happening?
Well, you know, that's a tough one because it may be that I don't ask enough, so therefore I don't really have problems with getting information. But you do need to sometimes push to get what you need and what you want.
And there are fortunately laws that require the government to make material available, but I would guess that we could each say that in our experience, that is honored in the breach. That is, the government does what it can to restrict it, right? Rosemary, you've encountered this.
Oh, yeah. Over and over again, it's bureaucrats seem to have this inbred in their blood feeling that documents should be kept out of the hands of reporters.
But you worked in Florida, which had, until recently at least, some of the best state laws for open government in the country.
Right, they did. There were open records and open meeting laws, and frequently reporters in other states would look for a Florida angle and whatever they were covered because you could get the records through Florida. DeSantis seems to be covering up those holes. That will not be the case in the future, I suspect.
Yeah.
It's getting very frightening down there.
We'll talk more about Governor DeSantis in a minute. Judy, when you were editor of the Gazette, you probably had reporters come to your office, as I did at the Times Union, with great frustration that they couldn't get stuff that really belongs to taxpayers, right?
It was incredibly frustrating and demoralizing for these young, especially for young reporters who read the Open Meetings Law and the Freedom of Information Act in New York State and think, wow, all I have to do is send this out and they're going to give me all these records that I want. Well, typically that didn't happen, especially didn't happen in a timely fashion. New York State, their laws really need to be overhauled. I think one of the chief drawbacks to our existing framework is that there's no enforcement power. Government entities routinely do not adhere to the law as required in terms of giving out information. And the only recourse citizens and news media have is to go to court. And nowadays, that's a very expensive proposition. So they're essentially calling our bluff and saying, if you want to challenge us, go to court. And they know that the media organizations don't have the responsibilities. I would argue that, and other people have argued, that we need some teeth in our information law. Many states, for example, let the state attorney generals prosecute or at least advocate in behalf of the public's right to know. That's not happening in New York. There's a push on to make that happen, but I don't see it happening at least this session.
Yeah, the same politicians who withhold the documents from the get-go would have to be the ones who would approve the idea of putting teeth in the law, which is kind of counterintuitive that they would do that.
Well, it also helps that the law has exceptions on every level, state and federal, that keeps, for example, legislators, lawmakers do not subject themselves to it. So the executives have to obey that law, but not us. And a lot of the records are there. I think it was a misspeaking that you said the media doesn't have the responsibility to go to court. You meant the resources.
The resources,
because
exactly.
Because they certainly have the responsibility. And the Times Union under you, Rex, did a lot of that, just saying, okay, fine, you want to call our bluff, we'll go to court. And you won when you did that. It just took a lot of time and a lot of money.
And remember, it was the Hearst Corporation who had a little bit of money.
Right. And that's why a lot of this falls to the New York Times and to the Washington Post, which does have the resources and legal. And it's one of the most important things I think the media does, is to go after these records and to keep fighting. It's also one of the reasons that I supported, long after they probably deserved it, WikiLeaks, which went and got records and said that these are created by and for and with the money of taxpayers, and we should be able to see them. And in general, I think that that is a true philosophy.
If there were a government official here, she or he would say, well, you people in the media place this extraordinary demand upon us, and we don't have enough resources to do that. You know, the federal government, for example, has such a huge backlog of pending Freedom of Information Act requests that it takes such a long period of time. So we can be sympathetic to that, but we could also say, okay, but this is your responsibility under the law. The Freedom of Information Act in the state of New York, Freedom of Information Law, requires you to do this. So you just need to allocate the resources where the law requires.
Well, I'm also a little unsympathetic to that complaint, because the reason it takes so long is that they go fastidiously through every line, crossing out as much as they can. There's no need to do that.
Yeah, I've seen circumstances where a city, for example, would try to charge the newspaper for the lawyer's time, the city attorney's time, to go through and vet the information before being released. That's not required under Freedom of Information law. When we talk about going to court, we're talking $30,000, $40,000, or $50,000, which is one reporter. So you're going to go to court and you're going to lose a reporter. And if you're a small local paper with four reporters, are you going to give up one of your reporters to challenge this in court?
Exactly.
I do recall many years ago when I was a young reporter at Newsday encountering the situation where we wanted driver's license records from the state of New York, and the office of Governor Mario Cuomo told us, fine, that'll be $7.5 million, please. They wanted to charge us, you know, a dollar per record. That's, of course, also preposterous. The answer is for information to be presumptively open and to require agencies to post digitally all the documents, except for those that have to be withheld for privacy. That is, there can be some exemptions, but the presumption of openness would actually reverse the current status, the philosophy being we hold on to things until people ask for them. Instead, it should be you have to make it presumptively and easily available digitally, which is technologically possible now, any document that's held by the government. So that is a great idea out there. But again, who's going to enact it?
So, Mr. Rex Smith, the question I would have of you is, why are people so recalcitrant to part with information?
It's the idea that the media is going to get this to embarrass us and make us look bad, and we're good people. We're not going to let them have it. It makes no sense sometimes, some of the records that are held back. It's instinctive.
And it is embarrassing to them, I'm sure, because once you pull back the veil of any organization, I'm sure there have been embarrassing moments in conversation here at WAMC.
Never.
Righteous organization. But still, I can see why politicians would say, well, that's going to imperil my standing.
Right. But they should be posting their draft budgets, for example. That should be routine. Put it on your website, in your final budget, and your annual report about how you spent the money. Remember the clash of interests when people started to learn what public salaries were. I mean, there was a lot of teachers. Every public servant's salary can be found not on their local database. There's a nonprofit that does that, but that's public information. Historically, knowing what people make is embarrassing to them. So there was some fight over that, but that's public information.
Yeah.
Well, this is, in any case, Sunshine Week, so it's an opportunity for us to speak to the value of openness in government and to say that that's an important thing.
But it's gotten worse rather than better.
It has gotten worse, absolutely.
And do you see specific areas where it is much worse?
Yeah, for example, back in the day, you used to be able to talk to, if there was a spill, an environmental spill, you would go and be able to talk to the person from the Department of Environmental Conservation that was handling the spill. Nowadays, you have to go through a public information officer who will give you the information 2 days later, and it will be not specific. And if you have any follow-up questions, they're not going to know the answers. That whole PR mechanism has overlaid the dissemination of public information at all levels, from the state to the counties to we're seeing in school districts and villages. It's the control of information. The funnel of that is just squeezed right down.
So, Judy, why that control? What is the intuitive, instinctive reason that people don't want to part with information?
They don't want to be made to look bad, and they're thinking that we are going to make them look bad. I agree with Rosemary. It's inbred. They're brought up to believe that the public doesn't have a right to know this information.
I agree totally with that. And I would add that you have reporters who are less skilled because they're newer, younger, less experienced, cheaper. So they don't know the law. You said our reporters know the law. No, they don't. I have had many student reporters. A class went to get murder records. Court records are the most open of all records. They're completely open. And this was a solved murder case. And the woman behind the desk said, no, you can't have that. And so the student came slinking back. And, you know, it's not just students, it's young reporters feel that way too. It's easy to cow them. We need to teach them the law because there isn't any enforcement on the government side. It has to be enforced by the media.
And what did you tell the student?
Go back and get it. And then also I called the woman later after the assignment was done and said, don't do that again.
Yeah, how dare you? There is this ongoing problem, too, that has only been exacerbated by the pandemic when a lot of reporters stayed home and started to do work by remote. The flackification of public affairs, that is, the you have to go through spokespeople for everything, has shut down access to the real players. And then the lack of feet on the street, as there are fewer reporters and as those reporters left, increasingly don't have time or energy or impulse from their bosses to go out and get the information. Try to get it by phone.
As soon as you have to wait for something, you're going to write the story without it, and then you forget about it. And our university is UAlbany at the top of my list of places that shut down requests for information because it's coming from students, and they know that the semester ends in just a few months. I'll wait out. They do that routinely. It's horrible. Public universities everywhere. There's all kinds of tricks to evade the laws because there is no enforcement of them, very little enforcement of them.
Now, one of the things at play here is the sort of inherent tension between government and the media, that is, and the role that legitimate news media play as a watchdog over government. There is inevitable conflict. It is sometimes spurred by public officials who want to make the media the targets. Think Donald Trump talking about the enemy of the people. But it also happens that there is a natural dynamic that sometimes gets away from us, let's say. I'm thinking of a case in this past week where a reporter for Axios, which is a national digital news site that now has created local outlets in 24 cities across the country, a reporter in Florida, a guy named Ben Montgomery, got fired when he responded to a press release from Governor DeSantis' office saying, in a note to the Florida Department of Education, this is propaganda, not a press release. And he was fired for that message that the governor's office then made public. Is there anything wrong with this? What happened here?
Okay, so I'm a veteran of being fired in Florida for writing things outside of an article that politicians objected to. It happened to me 20 years ago. And what I've learned from that, I would pass on to this reporter. I would have fired him. You are in Florida where you know the media is being targeted by DeSantis, and he's putting messages and notes from reporters on his Twitter saying, see how biased they are. And this reporter, unfortunately, played right into that by responding in an email to the Department of Education. What I would have advised as his editor was write me a story pulling apart that press release line by line, showing how it's unsupported. It's just parroting what DeSantis would like us to believe, that diversity is ruining schools, colleges in Florida. Ridiculous. I can say it because this is a commentary. And pulling it apart that way, line by line, not making it my opinion is that this is propaganda. He played into DeSantis's hand, and that does discredit the organization. So I think he does have to go, but I hope he gets another job. We don't know. It looks like his first offense, or maybe not. Maybe he's been warned about this before. We don't have the whole story, but I have to support getting rid of him.
You know, it seemed unprofessional to me when I read the story. Reporters and flacks, or the PR people for politicians, usually have a give and take. I think everyone here has been sworn at by people like that. And you will say, well, there doesn't seem to be much of a story here. You will go back and forth with them. That's verbal. This was not verbal. It was in writing. And clearly, the DeSantis press machine is going after reporters in the state. And he did fall into their hand. But I thought firing him for was extreme. He's apparently a seasoned reporter who thought he could make this position known. And in some instances, all press releases are propaganda.
That's true. And there's back and forth. I mean, Alan, think of if you co-founded this program with Gary Fryer, who was the press secretary.
I remember a long time ago. Yeah.
And I remember when Gary was the governor's press secretary having...
He was a tough guy.
And yeah, we had intense back and forths. And we would say things to each other that we cannot repeat on this station, which is regulated by the Federal Communications Commission.
Especially if the word started with F.
Foolish. But that kind of thing, I mean, that interaction is sort of the give and take, isn't it, between journalists and public officials?
Yeah, it depends on which journalists and which public officials. When you worked, as Gary Fryer did, for Mario Cuomo, you would pick up the spirit of Cuomo, which was, don't let anybody get away with anything.
Right. Right. It is tough. But the fact is that there's a different standard now, and there is a different standard on what can be actually presented digitally. You shouldn't record such things. If you're going to say something face-to-face, you certainly shouldn't put it into an email. But notwithstanding that, I mean, Judy, you fired someone for speaking out loud in an offensive way about a politician. So that is the kind of thing where editors have to expect a certain level of decorum, right?
And the other thing I would tell reporters and editors dealing with angry people, whether they be regular subscribers or politicians, is once the swearing starts, the conversation ends. We were trying to bring a level of decorum into the relationship and to not go tit for tat with someone who was off the rails in terms of complaining about a story in a way that far exceeded civility.
So let's play it out for a second, Judy. One of your reporters comes to you, you're an editor, and the reporter says they were disrespectful and I'm really angry. What would you say?
The reporter says that about somebody she with. I'd want the details. If they were being threatened, there's a certain point, a threshold where you reach where the editor will reach out to the source, especially if it's a public official.
Have you done it?
I think I have, or I've had other editors do it.
It's usually the person calling in or complaining who's angry, not the reporter. The reporter just wants it all to go away.
The reporter just wants a story.
Yeah, just wants another story. And I loved it. I loved when those angry calls came in.
Sure.
Me and you hit home.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you love it.
Because I have no problem with confrontation. So.
Oh, I've noticed that over the years.
Yeah, you've noticed that.
And reporters generally, you know, kind of take it as a point of pride if they get somebody riled up.
Oh, I did. Sitting in a meeting where everybody's yelling at you that your coverage was horrible. Oh, heaven.
Folks, if you want to share your thoughts, media@wamc.org is how you intersect with the Media Project. That's Rosemary Armeo. Judy Patrick is here. Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith, and we thank you for joining us. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You know, it is interesting that we're talking here about some of the language that you can't say over the airwaves because the FCC
prohibits
it. But, you know, you can lie with impunity over the airwaves. Witness Tucker Carlson calling the events in the Capitol on January 6th, 2021, simply tourists exercising their right to free speech. Is there any appetite? Is there any sense, you think, that there ought to be any further restriction on the ability of people to lie with impunity, to misstate? I have understood that there is a proposal presented by Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado that would impose some sort of a standards board on internet content specifically. This strikes me as being kind of difficult to even absorb in the context of the First Amendment.
Well, not only difficult, Rex Smith, but dangerous. You know, once you start to allow people to interfere with, you know, this kind of intercourse, it is a bad moment because we're going to see a lot more of it once somebody gets away with it.
Mm. You know, one of Donald Trump's lawyers was on a cable news show this week, and he was maintaining that something that the former president said was not a lie because he did not say it under oath. That a lie if you're sworn under oath and you say something that is not true. And I think Ari Melber was the guy who was interviewing him. He goes, no, that's perjury. A lie is a lie.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah Huckabee Sanders did the same thing when she was testifying about some of her comments as spokesman for Trump. She pointed out that, well, yeah, I knew it was a lie, but, you know, there's no law against lying to the media. And I think it has to stay that way for the reasons Alan stated. It's who gets to be the regulatory agent who's going to say this is a lie, this is truth. This is right on the line, but you can go ahead and say it. It's a disaster.
So we're hearing all of these revelations about Fox News, which unfortunately, of course, the viewers of Fox News aren't hearing anything about, so they don't know the contempt that Tucker Carlson holds them in, and they don't know that he has lied to them and that he continues to do so. So we're hearing all of this, but the fact of the matter is, this is coming up because of the lawsuit filed by Dominion Voting Systems against Fox News, but it may well be that that doesn't lead to any penalty. Fox News could win that case and a subsequent one that's about to come down, we're about to hear more about from Smartmatic, which is looking for $2.7 billion. Dominion is looking for merely $1.6 billion from Fox News.
Jump change.
Yeah, you know, what does Rupert care? But the fact is, lying about Donald Trump winning the election, lying now about what was going on January the 6th, seems to be something that you can do with impunity, except that maybe you'll get dinged by a jury or maybe you won't.
And maybe it'll never get to a jury, right? So, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we have seen in the past and we will see in the future because there are an awful lot of liars out there.
I think the First Amendment is in trouble. If this suit is settled, that would be the best thing for this.
How would you like to see it settled, Rosemary?
That Fox News has to pay a ton of money and make an apology.
Oh, yeah. I think they would have to go about every hour on the air saying we lied to you.
I think that the voting machine companies are enjoying this immensely because they have dinged. They've dinged them a lot. They have hurt Murdoch on this. Although you're right, there's no change to the business model. You don't just get away with lying. You make a lot of money and get a lot of power from lying, and that will continue. But even if the case is settled and it goes away, if it isn't settled, it's going to the Supreme Court and they will rule against strict libel protections, which we
certainly
have now. There's no question. It's a rigged, it's an illegitimate court. There's no way the First Amendment's going to come out.
Correct.
If it's settled and it goes away, then you're going to see some other law, some other case, because they're being pushed. It'll probably come out of Florida, would be my prediction, where the legislature has approved or is in the process of approving a bunch of changes that allow media to be more easily sued for libel and defamation. And that'll go to the Supreme Court. And again, we face the same prospect.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court, we face the same prospect of the media is in trouble. It is under attack by politicians and by the jurists that they have put into place to attack it.
I've told this story once too many times, and I do apologize.
So it's time
once
for
more. How about Fire Island?
How many of you in this room, I have asked so many times, have been wronged by the media, by the press, and every hand goes up?
Right.
Yeah.
Here in this room, we would also put our hands up. You know, I've had stories written about me that were inaccurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have.
Oh, certainly I have.
So what's your point? We should then throw out Times v. Sullivan.
No. My point is that everybody who's listening to this program who is nodding their head and say, yeah, remember when that happened to me? It's important that we hold the press accountable for legitimate stories.
But that's the whole idea of the law, the standard that's under attack right now. If you make actual defamation, i.e. Fox against Dominion, you get dinged. You have to pay. You have to apologize. But if you make a mistake...
And you have to pay for a lawyer.
Yeah. And their lawyer, too.
Yeah.
But if you make a mistake, which every reporter in the world is a human and mistakes will be made, then it doesn't put down the entire story and it doesn't put your company out of business. You're allowed to continue reporting. And that is what is under attack, that any mistake in a phone number. You know, when we're involved in a story, we know every detail in it. It affects us. So there's no way that another person trying to simplify, keep it within 5 inches or 30 seconds on radio is going to get every detail. You are going to find inaccuracy about anything ever written about yourself. That is not defamation. And yet, that's what we're headed to in the law, that you find any little piddling mistake or left out detail, and you now can sue the media. So the result is nothing gets written.
Though you've made the point, Rosemary, previously on this program, that the greater liability will lie with the sloppier news organizations, which are those on the right, frankly.
Right. I still believe that.
Be careful what you wish for, right-wing folks, because it's going to be your ecosystem that is more damaged than the legacy media.
But the bottom line here is that Fox continues to thrive as a business organization, and they'll continue to thrive. Those diehard fans are sticking with them no matter what. They don't care. They're not seeing this information, as you can tell by what Tucker Carlson continues to do, replaying the footage from January 6th that indicates that it was just a simple tourist event. He's doubling down. That's the business model at Fox, and they're sticking with it.
So we shouldn't, by the way, refer to it as a cable news network, by the way. This is a cable commentary network. I don't think that, as I've said before on this program, legitimate journalists don't work for Fox News. Or to put it another way, Fox News has no legitimate journalists.
I'll bet there's a journalist out there who would take grave exception to
what you
just said.
I suppose there might be, and I'd be very happy to have an argument with him about where you draw the line. That's fine. About where you draw the line between such transactional behavior, let's say.
Right. For a long time, there was this indication that, well, you know, they have the primetime hosts who offer a lot of commentary. But then we have our news division, then they do straight news. You heard that. But some of the emails that have been unveiled in the Dominion discovery process indicates that even people in the news division were going down on the lie and supporting the dissemination.
And may I point out that the journalists who didn't go along with the lie, with the fake narrative, were either let go, like the guy who said, hey, Trump didn't win in Arizona. Remember him? He was kicked out. Wallace and Shepard left as news commentators because they couldn't stomach what was going on within their own organization, as evidence said. It's just propaganda.
One of the things that everybody who's been engaged in making decisions about news coverage understands is that you make a decision by omission. You establish what is newsworthy and what is not by your selections. And Fox News news division, the so-called straightforward news presenters, are actually making decisions that are biased by the stories they refuse to cover and the stories that they do cover. And that's why, for example, a Republican friend of mine over dinner at a social gathering the other night said to me, so you think Biden's going to make it to the next election? And, you know, this whole theme that Joe Biden is going to die because he's old is touted by Fox News, by the straight news division all the time. And you don't see it elsewhere because he's actually a very healthy guy for his age, Alan.
As am I.
Yes, indeed.
It's true. I have a Republican friend who every day says, I was looking at video of, and it's some place where Biden spoke too slowly or too fast or shuffled. It's out there all the time. It's just being pounded in, as was the big lie.
What do you do about that?
I argue back and say, well, yeah, for an old guy who's shuffling along, boy, he sure did good going out to a war zone, which nobody else ever did. No other president ever did. You don't do that when you're a senile old man.
Yeah. And you can tell someone's news habits, where they turn for news by whether they bring up that topic, because that is only a Fox News talking point. Anyway, we don't have time, sadly, to get into this whole question about whether there should be more support for public media. You like the idea of more support?
There should be more support for public media.
What a fine idea there is.
That covers that.
Well, there we go. Actually, the U.S. has very low per capita support for public broadcasting by comparison to other countries around the world.
And when we have another program where we can argue the pros and cons of what you have just said.
There we go.
There are pros and cons.
There we go. It is about to happen. All right. That is all we have time for, however. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. With gratitude to our producer, Dave Gassina, and to you folks for joining us once again this week on The Media Project.
The common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.